Welcome, Impactful Parents. It's time for the Impactful Parenting Podcast, where I give you parenting tips and resources to make you a more impactful parent to your school-aged child. I am your host, Christina Campos. Welcome, parents. Today, we're going to be talking about marijuana. Hello, my name is Christina Campos. I'm founder of The Impactful Parent, and welcome to my Inspire and Learn series, where real parents come on and tell their story of inspiration and learning, because a wise man learns from his mistakes, but a wiser man learns from other people's mistakes. And today we're going to learn from Laura Stack. Laura's life came to a screeching halt when on November 20th, 2019, her 19-year-old son, Johnny, died by suicide after becoming psychotic from dabbing high THC marijuana concentrates. Now, Laura responded by forming a nonprofit called Johnny's Ambassadors to educate parents and teens about the dangers of today's high THC marijuana on the adolescent brain development, on mental illness, and on suicide. Laura is determined to get teens to stop dabbing, so I'm happy to have her on the show today to talk about today's marijuana, which isn't the marijuana that we, the parents, grew up with.
Thank you, Christina. I appreciate you having me. And yes, it is an entirely different drug. And I just didn't know at all. And I don't use that as an excuse, but I use that as a teaching opportunity to let other people know that I really didn't understand the marijuana that my son was using when he told me at 14 years old and had gone to his first high school party with a friend whose brother was 18 and had a medical marijuana card. There are 4,000 18-year-olds here in Colorado with a medical marijuana card that is very easy to get by telling the pot shop doctor that you have a migraine. So he used marijuana. They all wanted to try to get high. And he came home from the party. We were very close family. I was his person. So it would not be unusual, actually, that he would tell me, hey, there was marijuana at the party and we all wanted to try to get high and I used some. So I have to say right here that, you know, I wish that I could say I used all my, you know, motivational interviewing skills and demonstrated incredible emotional intelligence, and probably not. I remember telling him, you know, marijuana will eat your brain cells. That was about as much as I knew of the time at marijuana. When I grew up, we were more afraid of our parents than we were of the police. So when they told us not to use drugs, like, that was the end of it. You just didn't do it. And I just, we didn't allow drugs at home. We didn't allow any substances, but he admitted that he used it. And in my head, I said to myself, thank God it's just weed. And I couldn't have been more wrong. And after he died, 6 months later, we formed Johnny's Ambassadors with the sole purpose of trying to educate other parents about today's marijuana, why it is not the same as the marijuana that we used when we were growing up, and why it is not, as the marijuana industry wants you to believe, harmless, safe, benign, and natural. So thanks for having me and giving me an opportunity to talk with you about these things.
Well, I'm very happy to have you on, because I think that the mistake that a lot of parents make is not realizing just that, that the marijuana of today is not the marijuana that when we grew up with. Today, as you know, and we're going to talk about, it's not only stronger, it doesn't smell, and it's definitely a lot more dangerous. So my first question to you is, please explain dabs to the audience, because that is specifically what your son was using, correct?
Well, he was using flower also. Everything is more potent. And so I guess to back up, when I was growing up, and I'm 52, so in the 80s when I was in high school and we would find marijuana, I did use it a couple times in high school. I didn't like it. So I didn't use it after that, but we would have a paper right? And you would put some marijuana in it, and it usually had some stems and leaves and seeds and wasn't like great marijuana, but you would roll it up, right? And you would make a joint and you'd smoke it. So this is what most people think of when they think of marijuana. In the 60s and Woodstock eras, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, until 2015, marijuana was very low in its content of what's called THC, tetrahydrocannabinol, which is the psychoactive part of marijuana, of the cannabis genus. So we're not talking about CBD here, okay? CBD is not psychoactive. It's another cannabinoid in the cannabis plant, but we're not talking about that one. We're talking about THC, which is the chemical in marijuana that makes a user feel high. So in the 80s, marijuana was between 2 and 5% THC. Today, it is impossible to find marijuana with that low potency in the flower. In Colorado, it is very typical to have potency near 30% THC, which botanists used to say was impossible for the marijuana plant to hold that much THC, but one grower has actually produced a 40% THC, and that's just the flower. Okay. So in the Netherlands, for example, where marijuana is legal, anything over 15% is illegal. It's considered a narcotic, and it's a hard drug, just like cocaine or heroin. Today, all of the marijuana is over that threshold. Very hard to find flower. But worse yet, your question about what is a dab is how the chemists started to get involved with designer marijuana products, starting in about 2015, very quietly, unregulated, with no caps on potency. The chemists figured out that you could take the plant and you can run a solvent through it, like butane or propane or ethanol, and it will break off the trichomes on the buds that contain just the THC. So the THC and the solvent go into a tray and the plant is discarded. Okay, so that's the first thing to understand about these products is there's no plant. They are not created like this naturally out of the ground. So it's not like nature's plant or God gave it to us. These are now chemicals that are then filtered and extracted and distilled into a lot of different products. So in its raw form, it's often called wax, and it looks like earwax or beeswax. It's kind of bronze and sticky colored. A dab is a verb, dab meaning to take a dab, a tiny bit of this concentrated THC, and you get a rig. If you just Google marijuana dabbing rig image, you can see what these are. You just heat up with a butane torch, the nail or the, which is very, makes it very hot. And you touch this chemical, this concentrate to it, and it will sizzle and vaporize that product. And you inhale the concentrated vapors of that marijuana, in this case, wax. And they tend to name the products by what they look like. So crumble looks like a cookie. Shatter looks like an amber glass that if you drop it, it might break. There's rosin, there's sugar. There are a lot of different concentrates. A dab means to take a hit of one of these concentrated marijuana products and inhale its vapors. And here's the difference. They are starting at 60% THC and go all the way up to pure THC in, for example, like a distillate that the teens are using in e-cigarettes. And they're telling their parents, oh, I'm just vaping. You know, everybody does it, mom. Well, they're not vaping nicotine. They're vaping pure THC. It makes you very high, very fast, we're talking off the charts high. So one dab is about 100 milligrams of THC. An entire joint is about 25 milligrams of THC. So you'd have to smoke like five joints all at the same time for one pinhead serving size of these concentrates. So these are not tainted. They're not, it's not K2. It's not spice. It's not synthetic. It's not laced. All this crazy thing you hear. It is a pure extract of the THC out of the plant. So instead of like alcohol, where we have to ferment it and create it, they're just pulling it out and in its raw form, turning it into a bunch of other products. You, if you have never seen this, if you're like, what is she talking about? If you haven't been in a dispensary in about 5 years, you've probably never seen. So just go on Google and Google shatter marijuana image, concentrate, marijuana concentrates, marijuana dabs, and click on images. You've never seen anything like this, and it will totally shatter your preconceived notion of what marijuana looks like. This, Christina, is a totally different drug than what we grew up with. It's like apples and oranges. It's the difference between cocaine and crack. That's a pretty good illustration. Or a 4-2 beer, 3-2 beer and Everclear. It is extreme marijuana and it's all fabricated, manufactured and commercialized for the sole purpose of getting people more high more quickly. And the problem is when you add it to youth, you have severe deleterious effects on the mind. We know from science, from research, that when teens use this much marijuana, this potent at this age, which is defined at under 25 for young women, the brain continues to form. And 28 now to 30, I'm not going to make a lot of commentary on that, but they say that the male brain forms later to 25 years of age. So it really shouldn't even be legal at 21. It should be 25. But the problem is all the kids here are getting their medical marijuana card and they're using it at 18. And they're literally walking into dispensaries, buying these products, which are made completely legal. These are not street products. These are not street drugs. These are in medical marijuana dispensaries. And they legally buy it. And then they illegally go sell it to their friends back at the high school. And sadly, the middle school, 1 in 10 of our middle schoolers here, we're talking 12, 13, is using marijuana in Colorado.
It's astounding.
It's shocking.
A Colorado native also right here, to watch the evolution of weed throughout the years. And for those of you who are listening to this that do not live in Colorado, we've been legalized for several years and in a lot of ways have crafted the weed industry in ways that other people outside of Colorado just don't really understand because it's been here. We got specialists here. We're one of the first states that ever legalized it. And so
we're the first who legalized recreational.
Yes. And so if you're in a state where you just got legalized because it is becoming more and more popular, this is just so important to know because it is not the weed that we used to have, and it has elevated into something different. And it's fascinating to watch it as a native person from Colorado to see that huge evolution. It's crazy.
It is. And I mean, I want to be very clear. There are FDA approved cannabis derived products that do treat medically specific conditions. For example, there are two very rare seizure disorders that have FDA approved medications that you can get in a pharmacy, right? From a doctor. There are certain anorexia patients, cancer, pain from cancer, severe pain from burns, for example. But it's never vaped. It's never dabbed. It's never eaten. It's never smoked, right? Those products are very small amounts of THC and CBD, both synthetic and natural, 2.5 milligrams. And we're talking 100 milligrams in one tiny dab of shatter. So I don't want it to make it sound like I'm anti-marijuana. I do believe there are some medicinal properties that will be helpful in that, you know, the research that's ongoing and figuring out how to get people help. But the ones that need it, I talked to a mom whose child was having hundreds of seizures every day, right? And he's, you know, 12 years old, and she used a little bit of THC oil, a drop in a pill form, and it took his seizures down to a few a day, which for him was huge, right? Another mom whose son had severe autism, and he was able to function normally in a regular classroom because of a very small amount of THC that he took daily. We're not trying to take away medicine from those children who legitimately need it. In Colorado, under the age of 17, there are just over 100 children like that who use it for a medical purpose. There are 4,000 who are 18 who suddenly develop a chronic and debilitating condition at 17 years old, 364 days. Right. So here it's a party drug. It is very easy to get. You go to your pot shop doc, you pay your few hundred bucks, you get your medical marijuana card, and they make up whatever cockamamie. I have a migraine, I have a backache. If you go to a concert here in Colorado, you'll have trailers, and half of it is the doctor, right? Our pot shop doctors, which are just like the old pill mill doctors, quacks, you know, and then you'll have the medical dispensary on the other side. It's just a joke. It's a complete sham. And the marijuana industry said it themselves right from the inception that it is a red herring to get people to feel so sorry for all those poor cancer patients, right? Where really their main motivation is to legalize all drugs. I mean, they have made that very clear. And they have to come after the young people. In Colorado, for example, 4% of our users, 4.4%, purchase 65% of all product. Get that. 4% of users purchase 65% of the product. So where's the money coming from? Addicts. So it is an addiction for profit industry. They do not care about the little 85-year-old granny who eats her gummy every day because she has arthritis. Okay, that is not who they're going after. They're going after our children, the number one demographic to use, 18 to 24 years old. And guess what? In Colorado, suicide is the number one cause of death in our children. 15 through 19 years old, over 51% of those who died by suicide had THC in their toxicology reports, not alcohol. THC is the number one drug. And in fact, the CDC just came out with a study saying that the number one predictor of whether a high school senior will have abused opioids in the past 30 days is lifetime marijuana use. Number one gateway, not alcohol. It's surpassed alcohol. So we have to really understand as parents, first of all, it is not safe. It is not harmless. Do not believe the rhetoric of the marijuana industry. Never give your child marijuana. Never imply that it's okay. We know from research that, for example, if a mother uses marijuana, her child is 80% more likely to be a user and to have harm to the developing brain. If a father uses marijuana in the past year, they are 90% more likely to use marijuana And there is damage to the brain. There's science around the harms that come to the mind in the child who's using THC, to the teen, to the adolescent.
And to give some people who don't live in Colorado perspective, these dispensaries are literally on every block.
Everywhere.
And I'm trying not to, like, that's not an exaggeration.
No, they're more than Starbucks, more than McDonald's. They're thousands. There are thousands.
They're everywhere here. Everywhere. And so if you're in a state that just legalized, that you're most likely moving in that direction, like we are already here in Colorado. I'd like to know a little bit more about Johnny and his before and after use. Like, what, how did you see the difference? What did you see?
Oh, it's really tragic, actually. Johnny, before he used until he was 14, I mean, he had a 4.0 GPA. He had a perfect SAT score in math, 800 out of 800. He was a genius, actually, frankly, in math. He had a scholarship. We're a Christian family. We went to church. He volunteered with our family. We taught Sunday school, four-year-olds, for many, many years. We have a home-based business. We're always here. We're very close as a family. I mean, vacations, we were here in the morning, here in the, you know, when he got home, he was very active in activities. He played the guitar. He played the piano. He was a brown belt in karate. He ran cross country. I mean, he was just a wonderful young man, happy, handsome, smiley, charming. You know, if they want to see what he looks like, just go to johnnysambassadors.org. We have a photo there of him, a tribute video and his story. But when he started using marijuana, he pretty much held it together. And this is what's so weird about marijuana use is many parents think that they're just seeing normal teenager behavior, right? After several years, by the time he was about 17 and things really started to deteriorate, he was able to hold on to his 4.0 GPA. You know, it was like, he was functioning, and you kind of just think, well, maybe he's just being irritable. You know, he's a teenager after all. They're so grouchy and they sleep all the time. And he started losing interest in some of the activities that he used to be in. He began to isolate himself. He got more depressed as time went on. He never used to be depressed. He had no mental health issues. No physical issues. Some people are like, oh, he was self-medicating because no, he was not depressed. And that's one of the other myths, is that marijuana actually causes those things to occur when used, especially in adolescence. It actually causes depression. It's counterindicated for anxiety. You're never supposed to be given a medical marijuana card for anxiety, but parents think, oh, they're so stressed. You know, this marijuana will help them. And it's all because of the false narrative that's being presented by the industry, because they want, of course, the entire nation to be legal. That is their ultimate agenda. And that's where we will be needed even more to educate our children, parents, grandparents, schools, teachers, therapists, counselors, doctors, everyone, about why marijuana is so different and the very real dangers. So that's what we started to see in Johnny. He did graduate from high school after getting four D's his last semester because he turned 18 and he stopped going. And there was nothing that we could do. But his GPA was so high that he graduated with a 3.2 with honors. And he just wanted to get high all the time and smoke. And we started to see more aggression. He became more verbally abusive. And I was his person. Like, we were so close, and he would say horrible things to me that you just would never imagine would be coming out of your child's mouth. You know, F you, you be, you know, just horrible things. And it was very difficult. And like any parent, I mean, we did everything you would do. You know, discipline, removing privileges, tough love, good love, therapists, you know, doctors, psychologists, psychiatrists, very expensive treatments. I mean, he had three mental hospital stays. I mean, just the 5 years was just hell. There's just no other way to describe it. And he did go to college on his scholarship. He, you know, like I said, was brilliant. And he was there for 2 weeks and we were texting and he told me this was the very first time, I'm embarrassed to say, I even heard about dabbing. I had a child who was using marijuana and I still was completely clueless. And he said he'd been dabbing for 2 weeks nonstop. And I was like, what does he mean? And we're texting. That was how we communicated. And he said, I'm having a really hard time making friends. You know, I'm not really meeting people. And I said, you know, that's normal. We're texting, you know, you'll meet people, hang in there. And he said, is it normal to feel like killing myself every day? So that was our really first indication that this was going really wrong with this marijuana use. And, you know, of course, we went and got him. He had to be disenrolled from the university. That was his first mental hospital stay. They tested his blood. THC is the only thing in his blood. I'm talking huge amounts of elevated THC. And his diagnosis was THC abuse severe. So once he stopped using and he was in the mental hospital for several weeks, he recovered and he got better. And it was the first time in years that he hadn't used marijuana and I had my son back. And so he could have been okay. And he stayed with us because he was sober for about 4 months after he got out of the mental hospital. And then he wanted to go back to school. He's like, what am I going to do? Just sit around here. So let me try a different university. And he went to University of Northern Colorado in Greeley. And he was fine. He was sober. And at first he did really well. And then sadly, he went right back to the marijuana crowd again. We would see his postings and him using marijuana, dabbing and using a vape pen, which is very pure, 90% pure THC. And then he called me at 3 o'clock in the morning and said his phone was bugged and that UNC was an FBI base and that the mob was after him and that I was in on it. And you're like, what? And I knew that I was hearing my son have a completely psychotic break, which most people, of course, don't know can be triggered by marijuana use, a fivefold increase in psychosis, particularly in adolescents who start using marijuana. So we had to withdraw him from the university again, another medical mental hospital stay. And this time they had to give him an antipsychotic just to stop this, they call it cannabis-induced psychosis. This delusional thinking, this weird paranoia is very common with marijuana that they suddenly think like their phone is bugged. And he thought his dorm room was bugged, that everybody knew everything about him. Just really a very predictable, but very strange delusional pattern of thinking. So he improved again. He got better and he could have been okay, went to his third university, Colorado Technical University, sadly hooked back up with a girlfriend who was dabbing every day, went downhill from there. And 3 days before he died, he came over to the house for dinner and he said, Mom, I just want you to know you were right. And I said, about what? And he said, about the marijuana. You told me that it would hurt my brain. And it has ruined my mind and my life. And I'm sorry. And I love you. And 3 days later, he jumped off the top of a 6-story parking garage. And we read in his journals that he had just written, and we didn't even know the journals existed. And I published them in a book. He said in his journals that the mob was after him and that the FBI wanted him under the Patriot Act. And that everybody knew everything about him. And so we knew that at some point he had gone back to his dabbing and we went back through his phone and sure enough found in Snapchat and his texts with his girlfriend, all of the photos on, sadly, of his drug using in Snapchat, which is how most of the kids are getting marijuana through Snapchat. So there you have it. It's totally preventable. You know, I know with all my heart, if Johnny had not started using marijuana, that he would be with us here today. And so we started our nonprofit. We have 5,000 ambassadors now already of parents just like me who are experiencing the harms that have come to their children and their family.
Tell me, do you think that you could have prevented this from happening? Like, what would you do differently in your parenting if you could do it again?
Well, I don't look at anything I did as a parenting mistake. I mean, I don't think parents know about any of this. As most parents do, we taught our kids, you know, don't use substances, don't use marijuana, don't drink, you know, great communication, all of those things that you hear about that are protective factors, you know, go on vacation, get them involved, make sure they have straight A's, you know, get in church, have organized activities, make sure your kids are in sports, like every single thing you heard as a parent, we did. The problem is that really good kids make poor choices. So there isn't anything I can look back at and pinpoint. This is where it went wrong. This is what I did wrong as a parent. And I think that's where a lot of times parents don't come forward when things like this happen, because there's this shaming that the cannabis industry tries to do to parents whose children either get psychotic or die by suicide or have mental illness. They either try to say, oh, well, your kid was going to be mentally ill anyway, right? Or, oh, well, your kid was going to be psychotic anyway, or your child is not mentally tough. I mean, you would not believe the hate mail that I get for starting a nonprofit to try to prevent youth marijuana use, right? Like a really holistic thing to do and a worthy activity. People hate it if in any way you're trying to like threaten their medicine, right? So there's a lot of shaming that they tried to do. Oh, well, you must have been a bad parent. I wasn't a perfect parent, but I know I was a damn good one. And ultimately, you cannot control another person. We tracked his car, we tracked his phone. I mean, we had him in his room for weeks at a time. I mean, we tried everything that you would have tried, and so many experts, everybody trying to help us rescue our son from himself. But he continued to make bad choices. Even when he had recovered, he would continue to make bad choices. And, you know, I felt everything that you would feel as a mom if you lost your child. Horrible, horrible grief. I mean, I was just in a fetal position for months, and the would-haves, and I should have done this, and if I only would have done this. And ultimately, I realized that I couldn't chain myself to him 24/7. You know, I threatened that I was going to duct tape him to the wall. But he had to figure that out on his own. And sadly, he knew that it was causing him problems. He wrote about it. I have transcripts of his journals and videos in the book I wrote, The Dangerous Truth About Today's Marijuana. And yet it was such a siren to him. It was so compelling because of his addiction that he couldn't get away from it. And once a teen is 18 years old, you have zero control. If they don't want help, there is nothing you can do. So I would highly encourage parents to get help for their child before they turn 18, while you still have control, while you still have a say. I think the one thing I might have done looking back, which of course I didn't know at the time because I didn't even know about dabbing, hindsight's always 20/20, is that I would have sent him to a residential center to get help before he turned 18. I would have sent him away to a dual diagnosis center to help him get help for his marijuana addiction and figure out how to actually stop using it for good. Because once he turned 18, he withdrew all his consents We couldn't see in his parent portal at school. The doctor wouldn't tell us anything. His therapist wouldn't tell us anything. Even at the university, he changed dorms because he thought his was bugged. And they didn't even let us know he'd moved. You lose so much control after they turn 18. And I would just really encourage parents to do everything you can, if you know your child is using marijuana, to put the kibosh on it before then.
And tell us more about your book, The Dangerous Truth About Today's Marijuana.
Well, when Johnny died, started writing. It was COVID. He died right before Thanksgiving in 2019. It was, a horrible holiday. I don't remember a lot of it, of course. It was the new year. And then it was what would have been his 20th birthday. And we went to scatter his ashes in Maui, which was his favorite place on earth. And we had a couple Native Hawaiians take us out in their boat. And when we scattered his ashes, some humpback whales breached. It was just unbelievable. I was speechless. And that's when I kind of knew that this is a story that I needed to tell, that I couldn't be silent, that I wasn't going to be shamed, and I wasn't going to hide under the stigma of my son's substance abuse and mental health issues and suicide. Then I got home and boom, it was COVID. So I have 2 for-profit businesses as a professional speaker for the past 30 years. And so all training and events and meetings and everything dried up. So I found myself with 6 months on my hand, and I started writing because I knew that I would very quickly forget a lot of the details. And it is the story of Johnny's life, all of it, from the beginning to the end. And how can you go from this wonderful young man to he's dead? And it's 300 pages. It's a difficult read. It has all the detail in there and all of his journals and photos and transcripts and everything that we did to try to help him. And it's got 176 scientific citations. I feel like I've gained a clinical in marijuana. I know all the science and can talk about it for hours, but we have a scientific advisory board at Johnny's Ambassadors of medical doctors who helped make sure that everything I talked about in the book was medically correct and accurate, because there are actually thousands and thousands of studies about the harms of youth marijuana use. So I would appreciate if anybody wants to read Johnny's story, would honor me with your time, and then please give the book to somebody else.
And where can they find that book?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere books are sold. The Dangerous Truth About Today's Marijuana, Johnny Stack's Life and Death Story.
And if people are resonating with you and they would like to find out more about Johnny's Ambassadors, how do they do that?
Yes, join us. Like I said, we have 5,000 so far. They can sign up at johnnysambassadors.org. That's Johnny's with no apostrophe, ambassadors with 2 S's, .org. And there's a button that says join. We are 100% mission funded by donations from parents. We don't have grants. We don't have any government money. We are just a grassroots group of people working to educate. And we do a lot of graphics, a lot of videos and tips and toolkits and things that you can share with other people to help us spread the message. So we'd love to welcome you.
That's amazing. The work that you're doing is much needed, especially as the marijuana epidemic is going to get bigger as more and more states begin to legalize. So I want to give you an opportunity for some closing remarks to talk to the parents that are listening to you right now. Last words, what do you want to say?
Well, I would say that not saying anything is the same as giving permission. Not being specifically down on the side of you cannot use. We know that youth whose parents don't specifically say that it's harmful and that it's not allowed, use it more. So start early, have communication with them, sit them down, ask them about dabs. If you're over 25 years old, you probably have no idea about any of these concentrates, but they do. And they are really glad that their parents don't know what they are doing. So I would say get educated yourself. We have 75 hours of videos with marijuana experts on our website. Understand what it is and why it's dangerous. Kids don't really resonate with, don't do it because they said so, drugs are bad, right? They need to understand the neuroscience and the very real danger of why the prefrontal cortex is thinner, and how structurally it actually causes brain damage that does not grow back. So once you know more, you will be in a better position to be able to have a meaningful conversation with your child, whether they're young or an adult child using.
If you have an inspiring story and want to share your story with the audience so that others can learn from you, please go to theimpactfulparent.com, go to the Work With Me page, scroll to the bottom and sign up. And if you want to become a more impactful parent, check out all that my website has to offer. I do parenting courses, family coaching, 30-day challenges, and I give lots of resources. But until next time, you got this, parents. I'm just here to help. Thank you for listening today. Remember to subscribe and share this podcast with a friend. And don't forget, the Impactful Parenting Podcast is an extension of the Impactful Parent community. Go to the Impactful Parent website and download the free Impactful Parent app so you don't miss a parenting tip that can help you and your family. Thanks for listening today. So go to theimpactfulparent.com and see you next episode.